From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. As the weather warms, it's time to go outside and reconnect with nature. Robert Cook, Master Gardener for the Baltimore City branch of the University of Maryland Extension, shares tips on planning and planting year-round vegetable gardens. He recommends tomatoes of the Sun Gold variety.
It's a cherry tomato. It's very productive. It's the first one that produces a tomato in my garden. It's also the last plant to die in my garden in the fall. And it's one of the most productive tomatoes I've ever had.
And Peggy Perry of the nonprofit Gunpowder Valley Conservancy tells us about volunteer efforts in Baltimore County to keep streams clear of trash and riverbeds strong. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Daylight saving time. Daytime temps in the 40s and 50s, lots of rain, the tip-top of daffodil leaves emerging from the soil. We're still more than a week away from the first official day of spring on March 20th, but for those passionate about gardening, it's never too early to start planning. And whether you're wondering how to increase the yield of your vegetables, or whether or not you need to test your soil, an experienced gardener can help you find your way. Enter Robert Cook. Robert Cook is a master gardener for Baltimore City through the University of Maryland. He'll be leading a talk on edible gardens a week from Wednesday, March 21st, at the Parks and People Foundation in Baltimore. Robert Cook, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Sheila.
What is a master gardener?
It's an interesting program. It's anyone who's willing to spend about 40 hours in a classroom learning all different topics from soil science to botany to insect and pest management, and then you have to volunteer. 20 hours the first year, and then 20 hours every year to keep up your status as a master gardener. What we try to do is to help people in Baltimore City grow vegetables, grow pollinators, beautify their landscape.
How long have you been a master gardener?
I'm the class of 2014. So I'm a relatively new master gardener. We have some people that have been master gardeners for 20 years, but I've been a gardener all my life.
You've been a gardener all your life,
oh,
and
yes.
That presumably is what prompted you to become a master gardener.
It's going to take me well into retirement, and I'm looking forward to it.
So what goes into planning a garden, and what does that mean for the soil?
The soil is probably one of the most important aspects of gardening. With good soil, you can increase your production, you'll have fewer pest problems, and you'll just have a happier time out there. It takes a lot of effort to get the soil ready the first time, but once you have good, pliable soil, if you put an inch of compost on it every year, you can expect great yields from then on.
And so, I presume testing is where you start.
Testing is a great way to start. We always encourage that. You can get a testing kit from the University of Delaware if you just search University of Delaware soil testing.
We will find the link and put it on our website.
That's great. For $12.50, they will tell you all the nutrients that are in your soil. They will also test lead, which is important for Baltimore City. And then they will suggest how you can amend your soil by adding nutrients to make it appropriate for the types of vegetables or plants that you want to grow.
And so it's not, they don't just tell you, here's a picture of your soil. They tell you what to do about it.
Exactly. It's a very helpful report to get.
Is what you should do about it different depending on what you are hoping to grow?
That's correct. They have a general test for vegetable gardens, which of course is my love. But if you're into ornamentals, let them know that, and they'll do the test for what you might need to add to your soil to get the best azaleas or camellias, or whatever you wish to grow in the area.
How often do you need to go through this soil testing?
The recommendation is that you do it once before you start the planning for your garden, and then once every 3 years, as the soil will change through the weather and also the amendments that you add to the soil.
You mentioned vegetables are your love. What vegetables should people consider for early spring?
Early spring, you'll want to start with your lettuces, all types of lettuce, although it's very hard to grow an iceberg lettuce in our area. Our climate's just a little bit too warm for that. But leaf lettuce, romaines, and wonderful bib lettuce and buttercrunch lettuces will do very well in Maryland. You can also start with carrots. They're an early spring vegetable. And then peas. Peas are wonderful because you can grow peas vertically. If you have a very small plot of land, you want to get the most production out of it possible. A pea plant will grow up to 8 feet tall. Give it something to climb and it'll be very happy.
So give it something to climb. You just like poke a stick in the soil? How do you give it something to climb?
One of the traditional things to do with peas is actually exactly that, to use sticks. Two rows of sticks sort of leaning over each other, and the pea plant will be happy. You can also grow it up any fence that you happen to have, or you can just use string to create a lattice that the pea will climb.
So the plants you mentioned, lettuces, carrots, peas, they can all be planted outside now.
Well, it's just about the time to start planting your crops. It's probably a week or two early. The ground is very moist right now. The snow that we had a week ago has kept things quite damp. You want to let the soil dry out just a little bit before you start working it. Otherwise, you'll end up with very hard clumps of almost rock-like material. But as soon as the soil can be worked, get out there. You can start planting the lettuce and the peas and the carrots.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Master Gardener Robert Cook, who will be giving a talk next week about edible gardens. It's part of a spring gardening series presented by the Parks and People Foundation and the University of Maryland Extension, Baltimore City. Does it matter how you orient your plants in your garden plot?
It definitely does. Think about where the sun is going to be in the summer. If you stand at your garden plot on the north side, that's where you're going to want to plant your tall plants like your tomatoes or your tall peas, because they won't shade the rest of the garden. If you put your tomatoes or your tall pepper plants at the south end of your garden, they'll shade the rest of it. So think about where the sun will come across your yard and plan accordingly.
So in the spring, I want lots of sun, as much sun as I can get. But by July and August, that's baking my plants, right?
Well, it'll be baking lettuce if you try to grow lettuce in July and August. And that's why lettuce is a spring or fall crop. But your tomatoes will love the sun, and your peppers will soak it up. You need at least 6 hours of sun in your yard to get a good crop for peppers and tomatoes. If you can get 8 hours of sun during the summer, that's even better for those plants. They'll like as much sun as possible.
Many people struggle with bugs chomping away at their plants. What are some ways to naturally ward off pests?
Well, your fingers are a pretty good natural way to take care of pests. Go out to the garden often. Look and see what's happening to your plants. If you see critters on them that don't look friendly, brush them off with your fingers, maybe give them a little crush if you happen to have a pair of gloves on. And if you start early enough, that may be enough to keep your pest down. You can also think about natural and organic sprays. They have soap sprays now that really are just that, an insecticidal soap that will smother insects and stop insects such as aphids from propagating on your plants. And there are other natural organics that you can use, such as neem oil.
Tell me that again, neem oil?
Neem, N-E-E-M. It's an extract from a South Asian plant. It's very effective in keeping many types of bugs away.
And can you grow things near the plants that you are trying to protect? Are there plants to grow near them that will ward off insects?
Yes, that's called companion planting. It's really nice to always have a marigold plant or two near your tomatoes. Marigolds will keep aphids away, and they also look beautiful next to a tomato plant. Any type of herb plant that's aromatic will be a natural deterrent for any type of bug. So think of anything that has a wonderful aroma to it when you brush up against it, interplant that with your tomatoes and your peppers and your lettuces, and you'll be happy with the results.
You have some tips and tricks to make your garden, one's garden, more productive. Like how?
Well, this takes a little bit of planning, so now's a good time to start thinking about it. You want to think about having a three-season garden. You're going to start with those spring vegetables we talked about, the lettuces, the carrots, the peas. But pretty soon it's going to be too hot for those plants to do well. When they start looking peaked, you need to pull them out and start thinking about warm weather plants. That's when you put in your tomatoes, your peppers, your beans, and then they'll do well up through the fall. But as you get into the cooler weather in your fall, particularly your bean plants are going to play out. So then we pull them up. We don't wait till that last bean is produced. When they start slowing down, you pull those up and you start planting your fall crop, which again can be your lettuces, your spinach, your carrots, and you can always put that kale and collard greens into your garden for the fall. Kale and collard greens are wonderful fall plants because they actually taste better after that first frost.
Are there particular varieties of any of those vegetables that are more productive in our area than others?
Yes. Favorite varieties are something that gardeners can fight about. But if you're thinking about tomatoes, let me suggest to your listeners to try a tomato called a Sun Gold. It's a cherry tomato. It's very productive. It's the first one that produces a tomato in my garden. It's also the last plant to die in my garden in the fall. And it's one of the most productive tomatoes I've ever had. It's a round, gold cherry tomato, the sweetest tomato you'll ever have.
That sounds like a good recommendation. You mentioned a few minutes ago vertical planting. How does that affect productivity, or does it?
Well, it's a great way to expand your productivity. I grow both bush beans and pole beans. You can get similar types of beans that just grow differently. One will grow up a trellis. One will stay relatively short. With the pole beans, I get about half a pound out of a square foot of garden when I grow them. With the pole beans, I can get over 2 pounds per square foot.
Wow.
In the garden.
It's a big difference. If someone has just a porch or a balcony, maybe just enough space for a few pots, what are some options for them?
They have lots of options. One thing to always think about are herbs. Herbs will grow under almost any conditions. They're almost all herbs are great pot plants, and there's nothing more wonderful than just stepping out onto your patio, clipping a sprig of herbs, and using that for your to flavor your dinner. But you can also grow other plants. Carrots will grow in a container as long as it's deep enough. You can grow lettuce in a container if it gets enough sun. And then there are tomatoes. There are tomatoes that are specifically bred to grow in pots. You need a relatively large pot for a tomato, but actually your 5-gallon plastic bucket is a perfect tomato container.
And would those Sun Gold you mentioned be happy in a bucket?
They are not bred for growing in a bucket. You'll get some production out of them. You won't get the amazing production you'll get out of Sun Gold in the ground.
What other information can people find if they go to the University of Maryland Extension's website?
On the University of Maryland Extension website, people should look for the Grow It, Eat It portion of the website. You'll find information about every vegetable that you would like to grow. You can also find information about controlling pests in an organic way. And if you have a particular question about, you know, what's eating my broccoli, you can ask a master gardener. You can type in a question on the website and you'll get a response usually within about 48 hours. And of course, you might not know what type of bug that is that's setting on your plants. You can take a picture of it, submit it through the website, and get a response back.
Wow, really interactive. I appreciate you walking us through all this. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here today, Sheila.
Robert Cook is a master gardener with the University of Maryland Extension's Baltimore City branch. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to the Edible Gardening event on March 21st at the Parks and People Foundation in Baltimore, as well as other events in the Spring Gardening Series, and how you can get your soil tested. Quick break now. I'm Sheila Kast. When we come back, picking up trash, reducing erosion, what can you do to clean up local waterways? Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Kast. Clean water is essential for the health of people, animals, and plants. Yet trash and chemicals routinely make their way into streams that flow into reservoirs and the Chesapeake Bay. What can be done to clean up our streams? An event this coming weekend by the nonprofit Gunpowder Valley Conservancy aims to train volunteers to monitor and clean streams in the watershed. The Gunpowder watershed encompasses about 500 square miles, reaching from Pennsylvania, across Carroll, Baltimore, and Harford counties, to the shores of the Chesapeake Bay. The watershed feeds both Pretty Boy and Loch Raven reservoirs. Peggy Perry is Program Director of Education and Restoration for the Conservancy. She joins us to talk about the group's Adopt a Stream training. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
What does the Gunpowder Valley Conservancy do?
Well, we are a nonprofit conservation organization. We was founded in 1989 by Ed Steubing. And one of our main purposes is to preserve land. We are a land trust. We have land preservation through conservation easements. Right now, we have 1,607 acres in conservation easement. But we're also an education and restoration organization throughout the Gunpowder Watershed, as you mentioned in your introduction. So through our land preservation and education, we do workshops throughout the year on rain garden workshops, basecape workshops, rain barrel workshops, trail maintenance workshops. And through our restoration opportunities, we do about 2,000 trees that we plant every year. And we have two big major cleanups that we do, stream cleanups in the spring and in the fall. Project Clean Stream in the spring, which is sponsored by the Alliance for the Chesapeake Bay, and in the fall is Better Waterways, which the Gunpowder Valley Conservancy sponsors.
A huge range of activities. You didn't mention Adopt a Stream, so that's on top of everything else you just mentioned.
That's right.
What is Adopt a Stream?
Adopt a Stream program was formed in 2007 in partnership with Baltimore County Department of Environmental Protection and Restoration. Anyone in the Gunpowder Watershed, any adult, I should say, is allowed to adopt any stream segment. Through the program, we try to get people to adopt at least a quarter-mile stream stretch of any stream segment in the watershed. An adoptee would then become a stream captain, and they commit to cleaning the stream two times a year through those two events that I mentioned, Project Clean Stream and Better Waterways.
What else do they commit to?
They can join at two different levels, the stream cleaner level or the stream walker level. The stream cleaner simply agrees to clean the stream twice a year, report the trash results, and through our training, they learn about possible impairments on streams and hazards that they can then report to the Gunpowder Valley Conservancy. And then through our program in partnership with Baltimore County, we can report any hazards to the county. And they're really good at coming out pretty quickly and investigating any serious issues like possible sewage leaks or water main breaks.
So that's one level.
That's one level. The stream walker level is the second one, and that's everything I just said at this cleaner level they would do, in addition to doing a stream health assessment, which we ask them to do twice a year, in the first month they adopt and then at the 12th month. And the point of that is so that they can evaluate the health of the stream through a form that we have. It's a two-page form. Basically assess the condition of the stream. So the main point is if the stream changes severely in 1 year's time, there's issues there that we need to investigate, probably upland. from that stream. So that's another opportunity. So the stream captains are the eyes and the ears of the Gunpowder Watershed's water quality opportunities to help restore it. It's really important. We depend on volunteers. The county depends on volunteers, and it's the only way that we could do this really critical work.
And both the stream cleaners and the stream walkers are supposed to do the training?
That's correct.
And how many portions of stream have been adopted in the Gunpowder Watershed?
We've had 116 stream adoptions with 213 cleanups, with 3,000 volunteers total since 2007, collecting 56 tons of trash out of the Gunpowder Watershed. So it's an incredible amount of work that the stream captains can do for us, and it's just really valuable.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Peggy Perry of the Gunpowder Valley Conservancy about their Adopt-A-Stream training this weekend. Adoptees conduct regular cleanups and health assessments for their quarter-mile portion of the stream in the Gunpowder Watershed. What type of trash is typically pulled out?
Oh, my gosh. You name it, we've found it. We've had washing machines, engines, metal pieces, construction boards, cable wires, clothing, shoes, unfortunately needles, all kinds of glass. But the main thing we find, unfortunately, is water bottles, plastic trash. It's incredible. But yeah, we found some amazing things out there.
And so the volunteers pick up what they can, and if it's a washing machine, they call the county, or what?
Good question. Yes, we carry out whatever we can in bags, and through our partnership with Baltimore County, the stream captain can order a trash pickup when they register through the Gunpowder Valley Conservancy. They can order Baltimore County pickup like 2 days after their cleanup. It's usually the Monday following their cleanup, and the county comes out and we'll collect all of the bulk items like that. And if there's anything massively heavy, we have to report that to the county, and then they will follow up with being able to, you know, get out like the washing machine and the engine.
What about erosion? What can be done to prevent or reverse erosion?
That is a very good question, and it's a question that all of the nonprofit watershed organizations are dealing with throughout the Chesapeake Bay watershed. One of the things the Gunpowder Valley Conservancy does is focus on native tree plantings. We try to find sites along stream corridors, the riparian buffers or the stream bank buffers, to plant our trees. And we try to plant between 1,500 and 2,000 trees a year in those critical areas. But those particular riparian buffer plantings are really important. They're probably the best way to help filter out pollutants from air and from any runoff from impervious surfaces, such as the oil, the trash, and the excess nutrients in particular from agricultural fields, even from our own pet waste. There's excess nutrients. So planting native trees is the best way for improving water quality.
And volunteers are involved in the planting.
Oh, my gosh, yes. We have over 2,000 volunteers a year. The majority of them are through our native tree plantings, yes.
A lot of planting has been done at Loch Raven Reservoir, which is where most of Baltimore City and County get their drinking water. Tell us about that.
We've been planting at Loch Raven Reservoir since I've been here. I've been here for 10 years. We have about 15,000 trees that we've planted there. And there was a very large 20-acre-plus field that was open that we planted. And now we're actually, we've been asked by the city to do restoration plantings in areas of the reservoir where the native white pine stands have been dying off. So we're now restoring the native forests with hardwood species like oaks and hickories primarily. And that's really important for the water quality for our drinking water, which provides 64% of the water for the Baltimore metropolitan area.
I really appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Peg Perry is Program Director of Education and Restoration for the nonprofit Gunpowder Valley Conservancy. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to the Adopt a Stream event this Saturday, March 17th, beginning at 10 a.m. at the Baltimore Game and Fish Protective Association. If you can't make that one, there'll be another one May 19th at Cromwell Valley Park in Parkville. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.